talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We'll get into the Astros opening day countdown in just a bit. I've been reading that that book, Evan Dreilich. What's it called? Uh-huh. Cost of Winning or whatever. I don't remember the name of the book. But Jeff Luhnow, and the reason that I'm relating this to this, because I don't believe that the Texans are in a position where they need to be spending money trying to chase wins, because I don't think that they can reach the amount of wins that would make next season fruitful in any sort of way or fashion. And Jeff Luhnow, of course, he had some really bad years with the Astros. They went backwards before they went forward. We're currently living in the golden era of the Houston Astros because of the rebuilding that Jeff Luhnow and his staff were able to do and put together. And he had a quote, and he said it publicly, said it at a press conference in Houston. We forget it because it was so long ago, but he said that whenever he took over the Astros, he was not going to rob the future for the now. Because there's a lot of moves that you can make in the short term that cost you in the future. You're like, well, how's a free agent going to cost you in the future? Well, if you sign a dude to a 2-3 year deal and he's costing you quite a bit of money, that's costing you a free agent in a year or two that could be better suited for the situation that you're in. The Texans, like Luhnow, are not in a position to be robbing the future for the now. Do we want to see progress? Yes. But how do you see progress? Not by signing 31-year-old safeties. You see progress by hitting on the draft at number 2, by hitting on the draft at number 12, by hitting with those mid-round picks, adding a Damian Pierce, adding another Jalen Petrie. We didn't see a whole lot of Derek Stingley. But this team's success, future success, is going to be built on how Nick Caserio handles the draft. So I'm sick of seeing Nick Caserio criticism and how he's handling free agency coming off 11 wins in 3 years.
I agree with you. Because I think that that's the thing. Look, there's plenty we can criticize Nick Caserio about. And then we can start with the coaching search. And we know that, you know, he's done a lot of things as he's made a lot of mistakes in his first go-round as a general manager in this league. But some of the things that we've seen, we'll also give him credit for. And the other things that we haven't seen enough of either way, we're going to hold judgment until we do. And I think the draft is one of those things. I'll give you a passing or failing grade and what grade that is and judge the entire offseason after the draft. Because so far, I give him credit for sticking to his guns, sticking to his plan, keeping this train on the right track, and not being tempted to do what so many teams do, and now we'll just see how it plays out from here.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? You know, I love the show, but I have to disagree with you all somewhat. So I want to say I want to agree and disagree simultaneously. So, yeah, we are in a position to where we're not in a position to win, so technically we shouldn't be signing big ticket free agents. But why are we in that position under Nick Caserio under the third year? Not to say that we should be contending for a Super Bowl, but we're basically in the same position now that we were when he took over. Let me give you a few examples. So we have Justin Reed, who was a key contributor for the Super Bowl champions. We have Charles LeMahieu, who just signed a contract with the Super Bowl champions and just left the NFC contending team. These are people who we basically kicked off the team for culture guys like Brandon Cooks, who quit on us, and Kamir Grugier-Hill, who also quit on us, right? So we're getting rid of those assets. Our first-round picks basically really didn't contribute last year. And so my point is, the reason that we are here and the reason why you can make a statement that we shouldn't be signing big-picture free agents, it's because Nick Caserio hasn't moved this franchise forward in now his third year. Two disastrous head coach hires.
Yeah, but Gary,
a complete waste of seasons.
Gary, I can match that for you and say Damian Pierce was a fourth-round draft pick who was your best offensive player. Petrie showed that he is a player not only now but for the long haul. Christian Harris, same thing. Once he got on the field, he showed you a ton. You look at some of the other things that he did. He brought in Stevie Nelson. He brought in Jerry Hughes. Those were free agents that made a difference. They had an impact. So I can match what you said and say, look, those were all Nick Caserio moves too, and those worked out quite well for this team, and those were, in a lot of the cases, younger players with longer lifespans and shelf life for a team that sorely needs that, and that's not what he had when he took over.
I'll grant you that. I'm not saying that he's missed everything, yeah, but I'm saying big picture, when you consider coaching hires, when you consider the direction of the organization, it's more negatives than positives, which is why when he took over the team, basically, you guys are saying that we're in the same position that he was when he took over, not in a position to compete. And that's what justifies him signing more 1- and 2-year guys who are not going to help us be a competitive organization.
I think Gary's criticism is the best criticism that you can give Caserio. And I don't disagree with Gary's criticism. I'll make some points to counter it a bit, but big picture, I agree with Gary. I would use the phrase, though, don't throw good money after bad, because Nick Caserio had a lousy first 2 years on the job. Now, lousy might be too big of a word, but maybe a questionable first 2 years on the job. That shouldn't put him in a spot where all of a sudden he's chasing after, you know, big-name free agents to try to overcompensate for what was a very, you know, average first 2 years as a GM. People could say it was a bad, people could say it wasn't good, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a fair criticism. Like, the Texans have won 11 games in 3 years. He's been under, you know, he's been the GM for the last two. Now, I'm of the opinion, though, that, like, all of that is a sunk cost. Like, that is what it is. Like, that is a situation of 2 years where it was bad football. You fire two head coaches in 2 years. You're still in a position now in year three that you were pretty similar into year one. I think those are fair points by Gary. At the same time, though, you have to do what is best in the organization from this point forward, and you can't be living in the past. Now, if I'm going to defend Nick Caserio slightly, and Gary, I really do agree with you, so this isn't like an argument, but whenever Caserio took over, he was in a spot where he had to clear the books of a lot of Bill O'Brien's bad contracts and mess. The Texans didn't really have draft picks. They didn't have any sort of money under the cap. They were in cap hell. And it wasn't an ideal situation for a GM to come in year one and immediately start that rebuild. They're almost in a holding pattern trying to reset things for a year. In large part, I think it was a 2-year reset. I think that's why they hired David Culley. They hired David Culley. It was like, okay, we're going to reset things in 2 years. We're going to tear everything down. We're going to get players out of here. We're going to add draft capital, et cetera, et cetera. You bring up like Charles Omenihu. You bring up Justin Reed. Like, good points. I think they got rid of Omenihu because he wasn't necessarily filling into their plans of like a rebuild. They weren't ready to spend money on a Justin Reed, so that's why Justin Reed was a casualty of free agency. I think Caserio's plan was to reset it for 2 years. He was hiring David Culley because he was going to be a good soldier along the way. Wasn't going to be anybody that you know put up any sort of fight at living in a 2-year rebuild. But Culley was so bad. That Nick Caserio couldn't put his name to David Culley for a second year. So what did he do? He hired from within. Like it was the same coaching staff except for the head coach. Lovie Smith was now the head coach. The plan, in my opinion, never really changed because he was drafting Derek Stingley for Lovie Smith. They weren't drafting for a scheme. They didn't have a plan. They were collecting talent. They were clearing out salary, and that bridge was still the bridge. So if I'm going to defend Caserio a bit, I think the first 2 years were a hard reset. Now, it's fair to criticize that. He fired Culley because he didn't want to attach his name to Culley for a second year because he seemed so incompetent, and he just hired from within and then got rid of him and finally hired a real head coach, and you hope from this point forward they make good, sound decisions that can ultimately lead the rebuild back to what you hope is a playoff team in a couple few years.
And look, I think we're both on the same page. We're preaching the same thing. It's just that we could sit there and do what we've done in the past and spell out all the different missteps that Caserio's had. But the one thing that I believe I'm giving him credit for right now is the credit of being able to avoid temptation. Because the temptation is there, and we've seen it with free agency. We've seen it with...
And that temptation becomes more, too, when you're in the hot seat.
Absolutely. And look, we've looked at the Bears situation a year ago, and when you had Nagy at the head coach position, and who was the GM, Joe, before Poles?
Pace.
You had Nagy and Pace, and their whole thing was, we're going to give up as many assets and whatever we have to get another take another swing at a franchise quarterback like Justin Fields, because we got nothing to lose. Because the picks we're giving up, we're probably not going to be around for to see if they pan out or they would have panned out or we needed them or not. We're trying to save our butts. So to save our butts, we're going to go one more go-round. Yeah, Caserio's got a 6-year deal, but he could be done halfway through if he doesn't do something this year. So the temptation, you're right, Jeremy, is far greater for a guy that feels the heat and knows that his days may be numbered. He might get desperate, but he hasn't. He's stuck to the plan, to his credit, whether he's here to see it through or not. It's like Sam Hinkie with the Sixers and trust the process. Well, the process brought you Joel Embiid and lots of other pieces. You maybe screwed up on Ben Simmons. But overall, you never were there to see the fruits of your labor because you didn't make it through your entire contract either. And that's one of the prices you pay for being in the position and taking the job that Caserio took. But at least to his credit and to the benefit of the organization, he hasn't swung for the fences quickly in a panic mode. He's kept it where it needed to be.
But we talk about like adding the talent to this team. What's the best way to add really good talent to this team?
Draft and nurture and develop. And look, you've got a coach that said he loves the later rounds of the draft because that's where he truly finds those diamonds in the rough that he can develop and turn into Fred Warners and other players that he's developed. That's what you're excited about too. But the majority of these players are nurtured and grown and developed and mature in the same system. And that's why the draft is so important.
Free agency is about supplementing this team. All right, but let's kind of flip the conversation just a second. What else did the Texans need to do in free agency? What's another move or two that you feel like the Texans have to make?
Well, unfortunately, I'd say center, but I don't think there's that many centers out there anymore that to choose from that might be the right fit and the right kind of guy that they need. You know, so a lot of the guys are going back to the same teams. The guy in San Francisco did. You know, I think the guy in Chicago did, but there's not those big names or even solid names on the market that you say, okay, we still need a center. And I don't know if they're going to draft a center either. So that's one position that I'm concerned about, no matter how they get it done. And I don't know which direction they're going to go with that. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't think they really need that much in secondary. It would be front seven type players. But I think a lot of those guys have signed too. That I'm not so sure that there's any other position that I would point to. Tight end, I don't think there's anybody that's impactful at tight end per se. I just think if you're going to look at center, possibly, if you're not planning on having Tunsil back, you can look at a tackle. But I don't see much more that they can still do in free agency.
Yeah, center is the easy one. Like center to me is the answer.
Thanks.
Like we wanted center and right guard. Well, we're aligned.
Okay.
To borrow a GM head coach.
Well, don't
term.
Kill us and say the easy one. It's just. It's the glaring one that's still out there.
Isn't that the same thing?
No, the easy one just downplays it.
Why can't they go the Shaq Mason route? Like whenever we entered free agency and we talked about upgrade center, upgrade right guard, right? Like those are the two positions in the offensive line for a variety of reasons. One, you know, make life easier for Dameon Pierce. They didn't have a great run blocking offensive line last year. Two, to try to protect the rookie quarterback if you do eventually go that route. We had no idea Shaq Mason was going to be available. Like we were killing Caserio for not signing a center. Maybe he makes a trade tomorrow for the same situation with Shaq Mason was in, where a team is in salary cap hell. They're trying to shed some salary. And in turn, they're willing to do a late round draft swap or whatever. Like, I there's still some ways to get it done. It doesn't necessarily need to be a free agent acquisition. It could be the Shaq Mason route, but I'm right there with you. I still want to see an upgraded center. And quite frankly, I don't want it to be a rookie. I don't want a rookie center and a rookie quarterback. I like a veteran rookie.
You need a big brother that's managing the football and helping him call out the defenses and understand what's coming his way. I completely agree with that.
I still think they're going to go running back at some point.
Because, you don't believe in this guy that they brought in? I don't even know his name.
Boone?
Yeah, Boone.
No, I think they'll add someone else because the way the market's playing out is crazy. I mean, David Montgomery's the best running back signed so far.
Yeah.
I mean, Samaje Perine got a decent contract in Denver while Javonte Williams is hurt. Rashad Penny's in Philadelphia now. But, like, there's some guys out there that, I mean, honestly, Deontay Foreman's available.
Like, see, I think what you just said, though, is reason that they don't sign a free agent. Like, some of these dudes are getting contracts that are bigger than normal. Like, Nick Caserio is probably feeling a little arrogant that he could find a rookie running back in the draft. San Francisco used that model forever. He found Dameon Pierce in the fourth round last year. We're all thinking that he needs a complimentary piece. I don't think that the Texans are going to sign another running back. I think Boone was the, like, okay, let's lock him
he's
in. Let's make him our RB3. No, I don't even think he's the guy. Yeah, he's the guy that they bring in just to kind of, like, stabilize the room so they don't have a bunch of rookies. But I think that they draft rookie running back fourth round or later.
Yeah, I just think a guy like Devin Singletary is going to be a low cost and makes sense. Or even a Jamal Williams, like, now that he's not going back to Detroit. Like, what is Jamal Williams going to cost
$3.5 million?
See, but Jamal Williams
you
is a similar type running back to Pierce.
That's fair.
You need a pass catcher.
Yeah, you need a more of a scat back pass catcher, safety valve. That can kind of be the lightning to the thunder that Pierce is between the tackles. So I would lean that way because I'm with Jeremy. I've seen it happen too many times where a fourth or fifth round pick can still do exactly what you need, whatever 100%. You need at running back.
Yeah,
you're looking at the future that way. Like if you sign a 2-year running back, that 2-year running back's not going to be on this team in the playoff when you're a playoff team.
No, it's true. It's just like the market's so bad. There's some talented guys out there that I think you could get really low cost.
I am intrigued by Williams. Like I'm really fascinated to see what he ends up doing in terms of contract size and where he goes. Because
he's not an every down back. I mean, no. I've seen him play enough, but I know that he's punishing, and he's got a ticker. He's got a motor that he's going to go get it. It's just that I think he's too much of what you already have in Pierce.
Yeah, for sure. I'm talking about his market around the, league. 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to the Astros opening day countdown question of the day. Bregman, Tucker, what does their season in 2023 look like? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What are our expectations for Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman? Today's Astros opening day countdown question of the day. Just 11 shows left between now and opening day. Alex Bregman, let's start there because I think Alex Bregman's going to hit a little earlier in the lineup than Kyle Tucker will. Mm-hmm. Last year, Bregman had a 259 average with 23 home runs, 93 RBIs, played pretty much a full season, 155 games, had 656 plate appearances. So, you know, he was healthy last year, at least in terms – I mean, he played. He laced it up. Was he completely 100%? That's up to you to decide. But he laced it up. He played. He played almost every game last season. Let's start with Alex Bregman. Let's start with the batting average. Alex Bregman, year ago, 259. Career 277 hitter. What does Alex Bregman's batting average look like in 2023, Blanker?
272.
Dang.
I feel like he's coming up. I feel like he proved to himself and everybody else that he was back to healthy a year ago, but he wasn't quite the kind of Alex Bregman we were used to seeing. I think that, you know, strengthening this lineup even more only helps his ability to be the kind of guy at the top of the lineup that does a lot of things to set the table and also capitalize on, you know, the pitches that he sees. I think he's going to come back up. I think that, you know, he was just getting back to being healthy a year ago, and I think that he's going to reap the benefits this season, and I believe that the average is going up by, you know, 13 points or so. I'll say 272.
Okay. Yeah, I think Bregman's going to have better numbers than he did a year ago. I think a lot of, like, the early part of last year was him kind of finding his groove mm-hmm. again, you know, spending an offseason of rehab, things like that. Didn't have an offseason of, like, working on his swing, and we know how tedious he is with his swing. I think he's closer to his career average than he is his season average last year. I don't think he's going to hit better than his career average, though, of 277. Do I want to go to 275 with Bregman?
Watch him go 273, Joe, just to go a dollar up on me.
I'm going to go 274.
Oh, of course.
For Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman's going to hit 274 in 2023. Joe George?
Yeah, I was going 268, so just a little bit lower than you guys. I think he still has a really good season. I don't know if he's ever gets really above 270 consistently again. I'm just not sure he's that guy, but 268, I mean, I'm talking about
percentage points, really.
See,
a small portion. Yeah. Like
I feel better about
a skosh.
I feel better about him getting the batting average up than I do his power, to be honest with you, because of his command of the strike zone. Like, he has such good discipline. He doesn't swing at bad pitches. I don't know if we ever see the Alex Bregman power that we once saw when he hit 41 home runs, but I think he gets closer to the batting average numbers than he does the power numbers because of his play discipline.
I think the pop in small doses is going to be there, kind of like in the playoffs when he finds it with a little extra oomph on it. But I don't think it's going to be there for the 162. So I don't think we're ever going to see that MVP caliber season type power from him, but I do think he'll have consistent power numbers. So yeah.
Let's go there. Home runs. How many home runs do you think Alex Bregman hits in 23? He had 23 last year.
I think it's 25. I think he'll go a little bit up from a year.
Talked about how close he's going to get to his power.
Right, but I think that's not his career best.
No, 41's his career
best.
Yeah,
I'm saying 25's a fair number because it's up from a year ago. Because I mean, I set the table we're on the same page because you said the same thing. I think that he was trying to, you know, convince himself he was healthy a year ago and get back to feeling every day like he did when he was really comfortable at the plate. I think that in this lineup, he's going to reap the benefit. I think he's going to see better pitches. I think he's going to hit a lot better than he did a year ago. And I think that as part of that, sometimes you just hit a ball so hard, you weren't trying to hit it out, but you end up doing it. I think he'll take it up a notch. I'll say 25.
Okay. I just went on a big spiel about how I think Bregman's going to, you know, he's going to hit for better average. I think his average is going to be something that is more sustainable because of his plate discipline. Now, you can also lump that into power. You know, if he's swinging at good pitches, that means more pitches in his wheelhouse. See what I did there? Mm-hmm. Which means, you know, home runs. You said 25. I'll go 26. 26 home runs for Alex Bregman in 2023.
Of course you will.
I heard Polillo talking about how he thinks that Bregman could be like a breakout, finish top five MVP voting. Oh, actually, let's talk about that in a minute. What do you got here, Joe George, home runs?
I got 25 as well, so we'll go okay. Average out at 25 easily there. 271 batting average for Bregman is what it was.
I'm good
is that,
that
enough to bat cleanup for the Astros between Yordan and Tucker?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's
really?
Great. Yeah,
I mean, it's good enough. Like it's not going to be the sexiest numbers on the planet from Bregman like when he won MVP, but
does 25 home runs finish top four? On the Astros?
Top four?
Because you have Yordan, well, if he's healthy,
and
Kyle Tucker.
Right.
And
Altuve.
Then you have Altuve, potentially Pena, potentially Abreu. Right.
Well, if we're going off our consensus predictions for 2023, we have Abreu and Pena both hitting 23 home runs, Altuve
so
hitting
right
26.
So right there. So like Bregman, I mean, so it's not without the, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Alex Bregman could finish fifth on this team in home runs. And be your cleanup hitter.
Yeah.
Yep.
How often do you see that?
Never.
Not very often.
Because you don't see very many talented lineups top to bottom like this
Isn't
one.
Isn't that strange? He could be their fifth leading home run hitter hitting cleanup in this lineup.
And
that's
everyone
interesting.
Would be, and everyone would be okay with that.
They sure would.
Take no it. One will complain.
That's wild. All right, what do you have for RBIs with Bregman?
What did he get last year?
Last year he had 93. So he hit 23 homers but still produced 93 ribbies.
That's impressive, but I don't think it's going it to happen. I just think... He's going to be more the guy that sets the table and gets on base, but in the cleanup position, look, there might be guys, ducks already on the pond. I think 93 is high for him. I think that comes down a little bit. I just think Tucker, Alvarez, and even to some of Abreu will get some of those. I think 85. I think 85 runs batted in for Bregman.
All right. See, this is interesting because, like, we spend a lot of time talking about where Brantley hits, where Pena hits, which one of them's batting second, but I think it directly impacts where Bregman hits, too. Because I think if Brantley hits second, I think Dusty's going to do the Brantley lefty, Bregman righty, Yordan lefty. Where if Payne is hitting second, Yordan's going to hit third, Bregman's going to hit fourth. Obviously, you get more RBI situations when you bat fourth than when you bat third. But because he's going to be in the middle of the order, because I expect the lineup to be better, because I still think he's going to get a lot of ABs in the cleanup spot, I think he's going to surpass last year's total, but fall just shy of 100. I think Alex Bregman's going to get 99 RBIs in 2023.
I had it at 98, so.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So we're going 94 is the consensus.
Is that low for a cleanup guy in this lineup?
271, 25 home runs, 94 RBIs.
And I think it's a different conversation if he hits higher in the lineup all year. If, like you said, if Uncle Mike's not ready earlier, you don't want to put Pena there, and he's hitting two or three, he's hitting up in the lineup, then I think that number comes down even more.
Yeah. I think Bregman only bats third or fourth, though. Like I do like him in the top of the order, to your point, Blankers. Mm-hmm. I kind of would love him in the leadoff spot because of his plate discipline. People think I'm nuts for that because he has no speed whatsoever, but I don't really value speed in that leadoff spot. But I don't think Dusty puts him, unless he's struggling, I don't think Dusty puts him anywhere else but three or four.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right because I think that's probably logically where he should be. I just know how Dusty's going to Dusty, and I don't know sometimes the wild card of what he's thinking. So I think he could be all over the place. But I think if anywhere where he would probably suffer is the RBIs as he moves around the lineup.
But, Joe, what was our average again for Alex Bregman?
So 271 average, 25 home runs, 94 RBIs.
Were we too optimistic or too pessimistic with Alex Bregman? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's look at the other guy. Let's look at Kyle Tucker on the other side. What does his 2023 look like? And we'll look at Bregman Tucker's MVP chances as well. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that you should be in the market for? is a little bit of a home remodel. We're always looking to remodel our homes in some way. We're always looking to better ourselves. We're always looking to better where we live. So you've been thinking about a remodel much like I have, and Pinnacle Construction is the name that you need to know, and it's peak time. Whether you just want something fresh, whether you're just creating a new look, it could be the kitchen, it could be the bathroom, it could be a room addition even. Of course you've been thinking about doing that, but you've been waiting for the right people, someone that you can trust. There's always a lot of mistrust in the, you know, the remodel industry. You're looking for somebody that's not going to charge you through the roof. Well, Pinnacle Construction is that. A general contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair or remodel. Kitchen, bathroom, room addition. Choosing your team to remodel your home can be confusing, but allow that talented team at Pinnacle Construction to ease that confusion for you. Doug Johnson, owner of Pinnacle Construction, is a native Houstonian. He's been here his entire life. He serves the greater Houston area, so you know that you can count on Doug and his team. They guarantee quality in-house work, and they're here to stay. You don't have to worry about them running off on you. Licensed and insured with stellar customer service for every project and every customer. You can get your free estimates right now with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician. You can call or text 281-900-3004. That's 281-900-3004. Or you can just email Doug. Email Doug at doug@pinnacleconstructionllc.net. Financing options are available. There's an ESPN discount. All you have to do is ask for it. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience. Visit 975generalcontractor.com.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Kyle Tucker. What kind of season does Kyle Tucker have in 2023? Lots of, expecting him to take that next step in his career, contract extension, lots of talks about that. He's finished top 20 in the MVP the last 2 years, finished 15th in MVP voting last year, first All-Star game. Let's start with the average. Last year he hit .257, career average of .268. What does Kyle Tucker do in the batting average department, Blankers?
Well, I think this is going up. I think with the new rules and the change in the shift, we've said it. We've talked about it. I think not only Kyle Tucker, but I think this is the lineup that benefits from it most. And Kyle Tucker, it starts with you and Yordan Alvarez. I think Kyle Tucker's in that .271 category this year. I think that he's going to see a lot more singles get through, and he's going to see a lot more hard-hit baseballs turn into hits instead of outs, loud outs. And it doesn't have to be strikeout or home run or bust. I think he'll capitalize a lot, and I think he'll hit in the 270s. I'll say 271. You're going to say 272.
I'm going to go higher than that. Aggie Matt says, I think Tucker takes a step back this year because of the pitch clock. He won't be able to get through his routine. I'm of the belief that these dudes are just going to figure it out, that these guys are going to figure out and adjust to the pitch clock. I've seen it play out in college baseball. This is the third year they've used it in college baseball. It's almost a non-factor anymore because they're used to it. Minor leaguers, like, they're used to it. It's really a non-factor anymore. I'm of the belief that by the time summer rolls around, this is going to be almost a nothing burger. Like, we'll see it every now and then, and it might be a costly time, but I don't think it's going to be as big a factor as a lot of people think. His career high is .294. I agree with you that he's going to be a benefactor of the new shift rules. I think, you know, on average, the averages in baseball are just going to go up because of that. Now, I think it's going to be smaller than what most people think. I think the across the league, I think batting averages might go up like 5 to 10 points. So if you say that Tucker's batting average just by default is going to go up to like .267 because of the shift rules. I also thought he got off to a really slow start last year where it's like, man, when's this guy going to get it rolling? When's he going to get it rolling? And he finally got it rolling. I say he hits above .285. He's not going to quite get to .294, his career high, but I think he's going to start faster. I think that the new shift rules are going to help out. I think he's going to sustain it. I think, you know, going into the age of 26, he's on this upward trajectory in his career. I say that Kyle Tucker hits .287. In 2023.
Joey?
Yeah, .291.
Dang.
Oh, wow.
I will get to
Tucker.
I am high on Tucker because, you know, last year about Tucker that was weird was the gloves thing, right? The gloves came on, the gloves came off. He just, like, couldn't get it right. Like, there was just something with his swing last year that just, like, he didn't love. So I think whatever that issue was, he's going to correct it. So this average is going to be all over the place.
Well, but I think that we're all under the consensus
.283
that because of the elimination of the shift.
Big time.
He's going to benefit a lot.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. We're not going to do stolen bases. See, but the thing is, with 40 guy.
Plus, he knows his contract's coming up in a couple of years. So I know he's kind of playing for it already. So I expected to go up. I just didn't think you'd go that high, Joe.
I'm a big Tucker guy.
You're stumping.
I mean,
you're
hit 294 for Tucker, aren't 21. You? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
I love
he's
Kyle
done
Tucker.
It before. You're such a stump. He's done it before. I love Tucker too. 30 home runs last year. What does Tucker do in the home run?
How many had last year?
I just said 30.
I didn't hear you. look, I think he's one of the guys that'll benefit most from what this, not only from the shift perspective, but this lineup getting better, getting deeper, setting the table more. I believe his home runs are going to go up a little bit. I'm going to say, look, I'm going to actually give Tuck some love. I'm going to say 35.
Okay.
I think he's going to be in that 35 range.
I have him right there in that area too. He hit 30 in back to back years. Mm-hmm. Like the home runs are the home runs. Like the new rules really aren't going to change the home runs much. Like the dimensions are the dimensions. I don't know if he's a 35 home run guy. I think he's going to be at some point in his career.
I do too, and I know with that contract looming, I really believe he's going to start showing it more.
Yeah. He's still got 3 years, though. Like, he's got this one and two more. I'll say, here's another thing, too, man. Like, he might be hitting sixth in this lineup, which means fewer at bats. I'm going to say 32. 32 home runs for Kyle Tucker.
Okay.
I'm going 36, round out at 34 for the team here.
Okay.
So right now we're at 283, 34 home runs prediction.
That's not bad for Tucker. All right, RBIs. Last year he had 107. What is Tucker doing in the RBI area this year?
So yeah, I think average goes up. I think home runs goes up. I'm not sure that RBIs goes up. I'm going to say 99. I'm going to say that there's plenty of bats in the lineup that are going to reap the benefits of RBIs, but spreading it out throughout the lineup, I'm not sure that his numbers are going to go up or be the same. I'm going to say he hovers right around a hundo. I'll go one less and give him credit for getting more, so I'll say 99.
I think Kyle Tucker is going to lead the team in RBIs.
Wow.
I think Tucker's going to lead the team in RBIs. He's going to bat behind some guys to get on base. You know, Yordan, Bregman. I also don't believe Yordan's going to play 150 games. I think we're probably going to see a couple of IL stints for Yordan Alvarez. Hate to be a buzzkill on that. But I think that Kyle Tucker is going to lead this team in RBIs. I think it's a better offensive team than last year. He had 107 RBIs a year ago. I think his home runs are going to go up a few. I think he's going to go north of 110. I'm going to go 112 RBIs for Kyle Tucker.
I got it 115. So.
Dang.
Really? 115?
Consensus 108.
You got him at the MVP? You got him winning the MVP in the American League?
Yes.
I don't think it's enough to win the MVP.
I think Joe does.
I don't think so. What were your numbers,
Joe? He just
said
yes.
So mine,
I know, but I don't think it's enough.
So mine would have been 292, 36 home runs, 118.
Yeah, I don't think it's enough to win the MVP.
It's probably not, but I think he'll finish top three.
So who's more likely to win the MVP, Bregman or Tucker?
Tucker.
Yeah, I think Tucker.
Well, because how many stolen bases do you think he's going to get?
35? I think 35.
So you add 35 stolen bases to that best right fielder in the game.
I think he's going to be right at 29-30.
35 might be a bit high.
35 seems high.
But see, I feel like with the base changes,
true,
and the throwing to first base, like that should help him. Like those numbers should go up for Tucker. Like I think when you whole picture gold glove, stolen base, batting, like he is really an MVP candidate this season. He probably won't win it because Shohei will, most likely.
I think he's a top three guy, top three to five guy, Kyle Tucker. Whereas Alex Bregman, I won't give Bregman top five treatment. I think Bregman, best case scenario, I think Bregman finishes top 10. I think best case scenario, Kyle Tucker has a top three in him.
I would agree to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even see that. I see Tuck as maybe a top five MVP candidate. But
you've always hated Tucker.
That's not true. But I've always been realistic about Tucker.
I do feel a lot of pessimism.
Okay, Stump. Keep it up. That's fine.
You love it.
I'll cut the tree. Stump. That's fine.
780. Go ahead.
No, I gave him a lot of credit for a lot of things this year, but it's one thing to say he's going to have the numbers he's going to have. It's another thing entirely to say he's going to be one of the best three hitters in the American League. And you look at what Judge did a year ago, and that's just, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime type season. But when you look at it and say, even if he comes back to reality, I think he hits for average. He hits for power. I think that if Trout stays healthy, he does the same. Otani was unbelievable doing the things that he did, and he got a lot of credit for it because of the pitching as well. So, you know, and you can go up and down the list to where you say, I think there's four or five guys right off the jump that are going to be higher on the MVP ballot than Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, Trout's got to play games.
He does. I said he's got to stay healthy, but I mean, if he does, look at the track record of how many times he finishes in the top five.
This is best case, though. I think Tucker best case can finish top three. I don't think Bregman best case can finish in the top five. I think Bregman's best case scenario at this point of his career is top 10.
I think that's realistic. Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to think that he's got one, at least one more year where he just, you know, goes at everything with a bang. But, you know, that's why I don't think he's going to get the kind of money that people think he deserves, like a Machado. I think he is who he is. And not that there's anything wrong with that, especially for this team, but I don't think he's worth the money, and I don't think he's going to capable of doing the kind of things at the plate that a guy like Manny Machado can do.
9780, will Tucker follow Abreu or vice versa? I think Abreu is going to follow Tucker. I think that the middle of the order, and it depends on who's batting second, but I think that Dusty loves the idea of Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu. I think you're going to have those four in a row.
You think Tucker's the three? You think three hole?
No, I think Tucker's going to bat behind Bregman, and I this is how I think the Astros lineup is going to go.
Oh, Altuve
tough, actually, because if Brantley's batting second, now he might not be ready for opening day, but I think it's going to be Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Yordan, Abreu, Tucker. So I guess I guess Abreu ahead of Tucker, but I don't think Brantley's going to be ready for the start of the year. So I think it's going to be Altuve, Peña, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu on opening day.
I don't want Tucker any lower than five.
I hear you. I hear you on that.
Yeah, I just, from the at-bats perspective, from the middle of the lineup perspective, Abreu, because he's longer in the tooth and you know, you're not expecting as much in the lineup that they have. I think Abreu's great at six. I don't think Tucker should be any lower than fifth.
I just don't see I don't see Dusty going Yordan Tucker 4-5 after Bregman. Like, I don't see him batting the two lefties in a row because he likes lineup.
I know he does the feng shui, but
so it's more of like what I think Dusty's going to do based on what I would do.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't. I mean, if it was me, I
understand
wouldn't
have
Altuve leading off. Altuve would be my three hole hitter. But you know, that's kind of radical, and there's no way Dusty's going to do that. Dusty's going to have Altuve at the top of his order. So
true.
It is what it is. Yep. Were we optimistic, pessimistic on Bregman or Tucker? 713-780-ESPN. The HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. Do you believe in Jabari Smith? What I've seen these last three games for Jabari Smith, Blankers, it's kicking up my optimism for both Jabari Smith and maybe even the Houston Rockets. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's that time again. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5's fifth annual Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, supported by Rudy's Barbecue. We'll be giving away tons of prizes worth over $50 each. And we mentioned it's all free. Prizes include gift cards to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, Chewy's, The Burger Joint, and much more. All you have to do is head over to ESPN975.com to register now. It's Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, America's favorite light lager. Why not do it? It's free, so make sure you're getting that done. Somebody texted in earlier saying, Branham, how can you bet on college? I don't. I don't bet on college sports. Somebody texted that earlier when we were talking about the Circa thing. So just wanted to make that clear. Jabari Smith
Crystal clear.
Yeah. Jabari Smith has been fantastic these last three games for the Houston Rockets. Jabari Smith over the last three games, Blankers, went for 30-12, for 20-10, for 24-12. His shooting is through the roof, which is not great for all these casuals who say that Jabari Smith cannot shoot because he's a 19-year-old in the NBA and is having an adjustment period, and these casuals are saying the guy cannot shoot. Look, Jabari Smith over these last three games, it's not sustainable for him to play like this the rest of the year or even like his entire sophomore year in the NBA. But you know what I love about his last three games is that we again get to feel hope that Jabari Smith's going to be a really good basketball player in his career.
I don't disagree with that. But Jeremy, where I nitpick this is the fact that everybody is losing their minds because of the double-doubles. It's encouraging. I agree with what you said. I feel like there might be a guy. Look, we both said, and I was strong on the fact that I felt like he was the most talented player in this draft that the Rockets could have taken. I felt like they were getting the guy with the highest upside. But I also felt a little bit shaky about my decision to say that when I saw what I saw the way he played so far his rookie season. But the fact that he's picked it up lately and played better gives me encouragement and hope. What doesn't sit so well with me is his lack of defense, because he says he prided himself on, what did he wanted to call himself, the locksmith, and he wanted to be a lockdown defender. And the coaches in the interviews during the games would say how he prides himself on wanting to stop and shut down and guard Giannis and other guys. Then I look at Jason Tatum blow his doors off and go completely by him. I look at, for every play that Şengün gets penalized for not coming over from the weak side, it was because Jabari got beat so badly that he needed help from the weak side to come over and help him. He's got to improve on what his calling card self-proclaimed was in playing defense. But overall, I think right now when you look at all the players on this roster, he has to be considered one of your best bets to be a guy you can build around, even though it didn't look like that early in the season. Jalen Green's stock is slipping with me a lot. And I think that Şengün is kind of stuck in the mud because he doesn't play defense either, and he's had ups and downs. But right now, the stock is trending upward for Jabari Smith because he already brings a skill set of athleticism and basketball ability to the table where he should be better, and now he's showing it.
I don't really like your Jabari Smith being able to defend Jason Tatum thing. Like, the dude averages 30 points a game in the NBA. Jason Tatum.
I'm not saying on one play, though, Jeremy. I'm saying seven or eight times, Tatum went right down Main Street.
He shouldn't be guarding Jason Tatum.
But whether he wants to, Silas made a bad, maybe a five
that's having to guard a perimeter guy that scores 30 a night.
It's not just Tatum, though. He lets everybody beat him off the dribble.
I don't think Jabari's has been as good a defender in his rookie year as we, you know, kind of were led to believe. I don't think he's a bad defender, though. And I also don't think that we should expect him to be a finished product at 19 years old.
That I agree.
And I don't think we should be judging Jabari Smith based on his defense of Jason Tatum. Like, that's a
But it's not just Jason Tatum. I've seen this over the last three games. I've seen it over the last five. I see him. Like, the reason why, when I said he berated Şengün, in the same game against someone not named Jason Tatum and other guys, he got beat so bad off the dribble in the middle, and then he was yelling at Tari Eason and others looking for that last-minute help from the weak side instead of really, you know, giving that, he's got length, give the guy an extra step, but make sure you're prepared so that you can play him off the dribble instead of letting him go right by you.
Yeah, the big question that kind of hangs over this team, too, like, they're all very young. So, like, Jabari Smith's not going to be a finished product at 19. Jalen Green's not going to be anywhere near a finished product. Same thing with, like, Alpi Şengün. I think a lot of what we think Jabari's going to be as a defender is based on his skill set. Like, he's pretty fast. He's pretty long. He should become a very good defender over the course of his career. But, like, the black cloud that hangs over the team is, like, what's the coaching look like? Like, are they getting the most out of these guys? Which I would argue that I don't think that they are getting the most out of these guys. Like, does Jalen Green look much different with a much better developer as a head coach? I think so. Mm-hmm. Does Jabari Smith look much better with a, you know, head coach that's really good at developing? I think so. I think sometimes we lose sight, though, that Jabari Smith's 19 years old. Like, what he's doing at 19,
Jeremy,
in the NBA, I think, is pretty significant.
All fair.
I was looking at Kevin Garnett's numbers today when he was 19 years old. Kevin Garnett, Hall of Famer, really good player in the NBA, has a very similar body style to Jabari Smith. Kevin Garnett, at 19, his rookie year, 10.5 points, 6.5 rebounds.
Sure.
Now, it's a much different league now. Like, there's way more scoring, way more shots being put up. Jabari at 19, 12.5 points, 7 rebounds. I'm not saying Jabari Smith's going to be Kevin Garnett. I'm saying when we criticize Jabari Smith, we shouldn't be expecting a finished product at 19
years old. No. But I'm just saying, people, of course, like they like to do, the red Kool-Aid drinkers, are now going off the handle and losing their bleeping minds about this guy being your franchise player because of a small sample size, and they forget. And what I was going to ask you was, if you feel that way, and fairly and rightly so, because I agree, you're not going to see a finished product at 19, but I also see the game enough to know, like you do, that I can pick out the pros and cons and the things that he still has to work on and develop. I hear the same thing. I want you to say the same thing with the same energy about Şengün, and not just you specifically. I want the fan base to do the same thing. Şengün was getting murdered because of his defense a week or two ago. Şengün was being singled out, and the only guy that Silas was singling out on the defensive end. I see the exact same mistakes Şengün was making done by Jabari Smith. I just don't see the same kind of payoff, which is sitting him down, talking to him, calling him out, letting everybody look at that and talk about that too. Şengün's been one of your most consistent offensive players this year, but yet he was getting obliterated. Jabari, because of the double-doubles, no one seems to want to look at the same exact weakness that Şengün has in terms of their defense.
I think it's a fair point. Now, for me personally, I think it's more about skill set. Like I believe that Jabari Smith has the skill set.
Oh, absolutely, he's more athletic for sure.
Where I don't believe that in Alpi Şengün. Like Alpi Şengün, he's got to get to a point where he doesn't kill you enough defensively to where his offense outweighs his defense.
Yeah, he also has to focus.
He's never going to be a good defender.
No, well, he can be a low post. He can be a decent low post defender, but that's it, right? He's got to focus
in
on
certain matchups though. Because if you have a body that can step outside,
that. If he's playing
screwed.
A bulky four or a low post five, he can play defense. But if you're asking him to go out on the perimeter and guard switches and get through picks and do the kind of things that the NBA offensive systems do these days, that is a tall order for a guy with his skill set athletically. I think you're right. Jabari has length. He has height. He has some quickness, especially quickness for his size. And he's fully capable. He's going to get stronger. But I think that Şengün is what he is physically. Now it is just how much mentally can he understand about the game so that he can play a more intelligent defensive game and know where he's supposed to be on rotations and help. That's the best you can do. So they're different from that perspective in terms of what their expectations could be defensively, but they both have to get a lot better.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Dre says, question is, where has this effort been all year from Jabari? Says that Jabari's lacked effort really all season. I think it's an NBA thing. I think the NBA, a lot of times we see a lot of lack of effort, especially in the regular season. I would say that the Rockets lack effort more than like the average NBA team, but it's something that you would like to see improve. That's what I want from an ex-head coach, is I want somebody that demands that effort on a nightly basis. And if it costs you a superstar, if it costs you a player that doesn't want to work hard every single night, okay, see you later. Like, give me the head coach that demands effort.
Here's also what I'm going to say, Jeremy, because it's twofold. It's a word that you like to use when we talk about some of the Astros players. I'm going to use it point blank across the board for the Houston Rockets, and that's they're soft. And they're soft across the board because they've been fed a silver spoon basketball-wise their entire lives. They've been told how great they are. They don't like criticism. They don't want to take it. They don't understand it. On top of that, they're not getting any kind of constructive criticism from the coaching staff, seemingly. But when you're a team that consistently loses, you lose your fire a little bit. But that's where coaching staff have to step up. On top of that, when you've been catered to your whole life, you tend to crawl into a shell when people point a finger at you, call you out, single you out, tell you where you got to be better, tell you you need to do better. And you can go, you can fight or you can flight. And these kids are all looking like the kind of kids that when push comes to shove, I'd rather go and look for some love than to have to face the fire and say, I'm going to get better, work harder, understand more, put in extra work. That's where I would question Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Kevin Porter Jr. You can go up and down the line because I don't think these kids have been challenged enough. I don't think they care to or like to, and I don't think they take to it. And I think that's why when we talk about this, this is a two-headed monster now more and more. It was easy to point the finger at Silas till we started learning what we started to know was the truth from John Wall and others about how Rafael Stone is trying to be the puppeteer that pulls the strings and make all the decisions. So I take a little off of Silas for that, but I still say he should have put his foot down. Now I want them both gone because, as we've talked about, I want a resumed NBA coach that has to be respected, that's not afraid to put his foot down, that doesn't care if they don't like to be yelled at or taught, and says, this is the way we're going to do it going forward, like it or not for you. This is how I'm planning to do what I do. On top of that, you need a general manager that is in lockstep with your head coach, and the respect is mutual. It goes both ways, and they both have the same vision and goals for this team. You don't have any of that currently. And you have no reason for any of these kids externally to feel what they need to feel in terms of getting better. And internally, I don't think any of these kids have the ticker to understand, I've got to get better, and when the going gets tough, I got to get going and do more, and they don't like that.
Yeah, see, I'm with you. Like, most conversation when it comes to the Rockets is like, okay, what does Jalen Green look like in 3 to 5 years? What does Alpi look like in 3 to 5 years? What does Jabari look like in 3 to 5 years? Which, those are the conversations you should be having when you're talking about an NBA team in your city. I fear that the bigger problems are what's above that. Like, I think it's more bigger picture. That's why whenever we talk about it, it's more, okay, well, who is the authority figure on the basketball side? Who's going to be the one taking charge of the organization? Because that's something that the Rockets have to get right before anything else. And if they get that right, I think it's a different conversation of what all three of those players look like in 3 to 5 years, because I'm a huge believer if you get that head coach right or the basketball authority figure right and you get rid of some of the dead weight that you have within the organization, I think that's when you develop better than anybody else. So to me, it's far more big picture than just talking about the young pieces that you have, because if you want those young pieces to shine, well, you need to do everything possible for those young pieces to shine. And quite frankly, to your point, Blankers, a lot of times it's tough love. A lot of times it's tough love.
No question. And that's the thing. We talked about this yesterday, and I got into it a little deeper with PC. I don't know what you caught of it, but the fact is that in today's NBA, you need to have some kind of a calling card that the kids in the locker room respect. Harden didn't respect a whole lot. He didn't like McHale, but he had to respect him for his resume. And so you saw a lot of people fall suit in that locker room and understand, hey, I don't know a lot of these guys in the NBA that coach. I know a guy that played with Larry Bird, that won championships, that did the things that McHale did. So I understand he knows the game. He knows what he's talking about. When you walk in a locker room and you don't carry that calling card, you already have lost the majority of your locker room in today's NBA. And for these kids that are more of the modern day, they don't go really all that far back to understand been there and done that. But an Ime Udoka is a guy that's been there and done that as soon as last year. Kenny Atkinson was the assistant coach for Steve Kerr's Warriors. They know that, and they know that they won, and they know who he worked with. And so they respect that too. But that's when we talk about taking a team to the next level and bridging the gap. Rafael Stone bridged the gap just fine because Tillman didn't want to pay another full-time general manager after paying all that he was paying out to Daryl in the buyout. Same thing with a head coach in the first. Do what you have to do in the short term. Now in the long term, as you take the next step, both guys are not the right guys for the job.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. Weird Take Wednesday. What weird takes have made Wednesday's list? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Weird takes are next, but great takes right now. You need a goal from ProDunk Hoops. It's that simple. Look, March Madness has begun. There was two games yesterday in Dayton. There's two games tonight in Dayton. And then the big tournament starts tomorrow. And then as soon as the tournament's over in early April, the playoffs are going to be right around the corner. So you or your children, whoever it may be, you're going to want to be reliving some of those moments, reliving those buzzer beaters. And you can't do it unless you have a goal in your yard. And if you have a goal in your yard, you're doing it wrong if it's not a goal from ProDunk, because they have the highest quality basketball goals that you will find. A tempered glass backboard, a true authentic feel when you're kissing it off the glass, when you're missing some shots. Breakaway rim, if you want to lower it down to 5 feet, throw down some jams, raise it up all the way to 10 feet, work on your shot anywhere in between. They have that breakaway rim that makes sure to keep you and your loved ones safe. They also have an extended overhang, so you don't have to worry about the basketball stanchion being right there and spraining your ankle if you have weak ankles. I know some people like that on that basketball stanchion. So you'll love the extended overhang. We talked about the quality. Why is their quality the best? Because they have thick steel poles, stainless steel hardware, some unlike anything else that you can find in the big box stores. Also, their accessories are on another level. LED light kits for night play. Sometimes a little warm in Houston. Spoiler alert. So you might want to play at night, or you can't play till you're after school or you're off work. We'll get an LED light kit so you can shoot some hoops during the evening and into the night. Backstop nets, too, so you don't have to chase the basketball everywhere, and pole pad lettering. You can order everything, including professional installation. Yes, the pros at ProDunk will professionally install your goal, perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. You watch the buzzer beaters during the tournament while you let the pros at ProDunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Give them a call right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.